Welcome to the Million Vegan Grandmothers podcast. And today I have Akhil Taher. And Akhil is a physician who had an amazing awakening, beginning when he was 56 years old and continuing till you're 61, I believe, and wrote about it in a book called Open Heart. Welcome, Akhil.
Thank you so much for the kind introduction. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So I am always curious about what awakens people. Awakens people from feeling that they're living a life of spiritual bankruptcy to a life of spiritual purpose and thriving, from going from barely surviving, even if we don't know it, because our egos are very strong. And you talk about that. I listened to a little bit of your audiobook this morning, and you speak very openly and very humbly about how you went from living a life of being relatively vain and arrogant to having this heart disease that opened you right up to another realm, and becoming a person that knows that you're only here for love and service. So what was that transformation like for you during those years?
You see, I was bent on hurting myself in terms of a bad diet, no exercise, a lot of stress, type A personality. All these fit into my, including the genetics, which is only 15 to 30%. But including all that led me to have a heart disease. Now, I always say this, Tammy, that adversity can either be your best friend or your worst enemy. So when I got my heart disease at a young age of 56, I did not change my life. I continued the same life. There was nothing that I wanted to change. I thought medical science would get me out of it. So I kept on doing what I did. I went deeper into the hole. Right now, from physical symptoms that I had, with all the diverticulitis and pneumonias and sinus infections visiting me every year, I now went into depression, almost to a stage of taking my own life. So then came that my stance obviously failed because of the way I was leading my life. So when they carried me the next time, about 5 years after my stance, I was back in the hospital. This time, as they carried me in, I don't know why to this day, why I said this, but I told the nurses in the ICU that if all goes well, I will do a half marathon within a year's time. I really, at the same time, I don't know why I said that. But looking back, I believe that that was a moment when I realized that either I'm going to continue this horrendous end of life journey, or to really, really think of living my life with passion, purpose, and positivity. So I made that statement. And 7 months after that, I kept up the promise because I took up running. Imagine, I was a couch potato, Tammy. I had not even done 1 kilometer in my life. Walk. So it is like a baby learning how to walk. So I had to go around, and I was feeling miserable initially, but then it grew on me. That became meditation in motion for me. So with the grass and the flowers and the springs, I felt great. And this may be, I know a lot of people say that you should have a running partner and go in group. That way you can be enthused about it. But as far as I'm concerned, I like to run alone. Because as I said, it becomes meditation for me. So I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Sorry about that. It sounds like you were running with the divine. You know, you just had this divine awakening, and You never probably felt alone. You felt like you had this certain wind beneath your wings at this point.
It's very true because when I this was 7 months after the what I did, the half marathon, and then a year after that, somebody said, "Would you like to go on a pilgrimage yatra?" But they did not use the word pilgrimage, and so I thought I'm going on a trekking. 19,000 feet, Mount Kailash in Tibet, China, 1 year after my heart surgery. Now, when I did go over there, this is something that the listeners should understand: the importance of the being, the importance of a power that we have to understand. Because as we reached, we circumvented 19,000 feet. And as we reached over there, everybody was high-fiving and saying, "Well done." I didn't feel like that. I just walked away from that, sat alone on a rock, and realized and said to myself, "Akhil, if all this, your Mercedes cars and your this and your clothes and this, if they were not there, would you be able to survive?" And words cannot explain this, but I did make up my mind at that time, some inner voice, so that everything was okay when I came down. My wife, the next day, she said, "Something happened up there." I said, "Why?" She said, "You mellowed down. Your personality has mellowed down. You're more receiving now, more listening." Not that I was bad ever with my patients. Yes, I have not done justice to my family, friends, but I was always good to my patients. But now I realize I listened more. And so that is what, when you call the divine intervention, whatever it is, it made me what I am today. I am still a work in progress. I have a lot to learn. And I want people to read my book, not because, "Oh, he has climbed Mount Kailash and has done Mount Kilimanjaro, he has run marathons." No. Learn from my mistakes. I have not monetized even the sale of my books. I've always given it to PETA, that is my wife's charity, and mine, St. Jude's. And I'm doing telemedicine also. Anybody can first text me and tell me, and I'll be very happy to answer. If they cannot reach their physicians or something, I'll be there.
Wow, that's amazing, service. And thank you for that. And that was a question that I had. I'm actually really curious about this. I remember reading a book by one of my favorite Buddhist monks, late Buddhist monks, Thich Nhat Hanh. And I don't know if I can even use the word late because he left such an energy of love on this planet that he's never going to be the late Thich Nhat Hanh. But he said that before we go out in the world and try to save the world, you said you were always felt like you were good to your patients. And I'm sure that you are a much better listener than you've ever been now that you listen to the vibe, you listen to the stuff that they're not saying, I believe, because that's what happens when we go deeper within ourselves. But before we go out and save the world, we need to learn to really love another being, not our children necessarily, because we're expected to, and it's easy to love a child. They're our children. But our partner, with all our love and commitment, before we head off into the world to try to save the world. Now, you kind of did it a little bit the other way around. You really prided yourself on being a good physician that really listened to your patients within the realm of what you knew, because there's only a certain amount of listening that can go on when you don't know anything about nutrition or lifestyle medicine, like yoga, meditation. But now it sounds like you're really listening to your partner, your life partner, your wife. What is that like for her? What is her feedback on that? How has that changed her life?
You see, it works both ways in some cases. When I changed my lifestyle, I realized that I was so many times at fault but I thought I was right.
Mm.
Or it was my opinion, it is my way or the highway. Now I realize there can be difference of opinion. You can disagree to agree. And that is what I found out between me and my wife. Of course, we have disagreements, no doubt. But our disagreements are all, like they say, not below the belt, really hurting a person, no. So our disagreements are there. We agree on so many things. And she herself has, I believe, that she is changed to me, whether she has or not. But to me, she is now a different person. Not because she's a different person, because I visualize her as somebody who is now. If I had been like this 20 years ago, maybe she would have been right now what she is. Or she was always like this, but I did not understand. It's a little complex, but the idea is we do get along. We have a lot of common things. The reason I'm saying this is everybody changes into vegan, plant-based vegan for three reasons. Either it is health reason or the animal rights or your climate changes. Now, my wife changed 35, 40 years back because of animal rights. I did not. I changed for health. But when I changed for health, when you eat the right type of foods, your other perceptions change. You become more compassionate. You become more loving. Love, the word loving. You become more caring. So, and I realized that, yeah, this is wrong. What is happening to the animal? Because no matter how humanely you bring up an animal and kill an animal, morally you're not justified in doing so. That's my opinion. Number two, the climate changes with animal farming. We are destroying, deforesting trees and your carbon dioxide and your heat and your melting of your glaciers. I was on Mount Kilimanjaro. They showed me the pictures down when I started. And I went up the dwindling snow caps. So there it was. So it made me change into a better person, this lifestyle that I'm talking about. Lifestyle changes. And I'm surprised it's such a simple thing can avoid you getting man-made diseases, chronic diseases. And we are still not convinced. We are still going around and getting something, a blood pressure, and taking medications. And I'm a doctor. I'm saying this. I do agree that if you have got, you see, people should understand this, that some of the things that you have are genetically, or you, as a child that you had, like, for example, my conduction defect in my heart. No amount of lifestyle, this thing, is going to change that pathway because that has been there. But if I lead a proper life, it can help me to learn to live with that. Mm-hmm. Similarly, just recently, 2 months back, you will not believe it, Tammy, I had a high cholesterol. And I was wondering with my lifestyle, why is my cholesterol not coming down? And I give a lot of talks, a lot of podcasts and all that. And one day a lady asked me that, do you know, I'm a doctor, you know about lipoprotein A, LP little A. And I started doing research and I told my cardiologist, have you ever done this on me? The normal is up to 30, the level. Mine was 300. And what is LP little A? It is a type of cholesterol which has got Velcro. So it sticks to the coronary arteries prematurely. And you can't change that because that is given to me genetically. But now, when you talk about blood pressure, diabetes, cholesterol, obesity, heart disease, strokes, these can be avoided. And this is costing you and me as taxpayers billions and billions of dollars. Plus, a very important thing that I have learned recently is sleep. We give very little importance to sleep. But I'm reading a book right now. I wish everybody would read that. How to Sleep. It is fascinating. And it, in my opinion, as your food, your plant-based food is your cornerstone of your six pillars. And the rest of them are complements. But normally when people talk is you eat good food and you exercise and you sleep and you don't handle stress properly, don't do abusive substances, and have a social support. You're done. My lecture is done. But not so. You see, each branch is interconnected. Each pillar is interconnected. And how we interconnect, because you may be lacking in a particular pillar, I may be lacking in a different pillar. But how is your pillar going to help me? How is my pillar going to help you?
Yeah, and I love the analogy of the pillar. It feels strong and solid. And to me, it would be like a tree, you know, a really ancient tree is kind of my pillar with the roots so deep down. It's not going to be pulled over very easily. And, you know, in your book, just kind of going through the introduction, you know, the praising, you know, the open heart book, your open heart book, you talk about doctors make the worst patients. And what I just heard you speak about is the genetic factor in health. And I think that sometimes doctors make the worst patients because, well, I don't think I actually believe this deeply. It's because they're trained very much in a pharmaceutical model. And this has happened maybe on purpose. We can talk about, you know, why the pharmaceutical company took over all of medicine. But there is a massive epigenetic component, the over the gene. And that what I hear you saying is that you can have these maybe genetic dispositions or even genetic anomalies. But if you live a life that doesn't promote an epigenetic lifestyle, that doesn't trigger. So when we talk about genes, we have this epigenetic expression of the genes, all of these different potential proteins that can turn off or turn on that genetic code. And, you know, in my family, there's heart disease and there's cancer and there's all kinds of stuff. But my epigenetic blueprint, when I went away to a wellness center, they said your chance of ever having any of that is actually zero based on your blood work. And so I just don't have any issues because I have mostly eaten a plant-based diet and I've loved exercising. But the other thing I added to my life deeply when I was healing Crohn's, I was very, very sick with the Crohn's and trying to figure out the answer to that. So I went 100% plant-based and vegan, which meant that I completely aligned my life into a way that was compassionate for all. But I also had to heal the emotional component of my childhood. And I think we all have to do that. And so what in traditional Chinese medicine, which is, you know, beyond pharmacology, the every organ stores an emotion and the bowel stores sadness. And I had to work through a lot of sadness in order to heal completely and release a lot through breath and yoga of the trauma that sat in my tissue and in my organs. And that's a whole other way of looking that maybe that's one of the reasons doctors make the worst patients and why adversity can be your best friend, because they have you searching for stuff like marathons to resurrect your health and for you understanding that diet is more important than exercise and that living in nature and thriving is the way to go. So you've given people the codes. You've given people the codes in your book and in the way that you're living, even more importantly. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. And I really believe in this, you know, that if you so rightly pointed out so many things over here, doctors make the worst patients. At times there is a reason for it. They believe, as I said before, medical science will get them out of it. They believe because they're dishing that to the patients.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody comes around and says, I've got this, so don't worry about it. If something happens, we can always have surgery done on you.
Mm-hmm.
But where is the cure? I was thinking the other day, and I was talking to a group of people, and I said, when I got my heart disease, had I known then what I know today, I would have not gone in for stents or surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? The reason being that I did not get a heart attack. So for your listeners, please listen to this. If you get chest pain, go to your doctor, go to the emergency room. I'm not saying don't. Once your blood test and your EKG and everything is done and it is normal, or they ask you to get a stress test done and you are in your 60s, you've not got a heart attack, but you've got angina.
Mm-hmm.
When there are heart plaques, mine were 98 to 99% blocked in two of my arteries, one which is called the your LED, the Widowmaker. But these are, and one time during the stents, my heart stopped. So the cardiac arrest, and they had to shock me to get my heart beating again. So my point is that doctors always feel that, look, we're going to get out of this and we're going to get out. I have a friend in the small town Gadsden. He is a superb pulmonologist as far as things are concerned. But he did not realize that he had a liver problem.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a severe where he had to have a liver transplant. And they don't. A friend of mine from medical school, a superb oncologist, people from London and America would go to Bombay to meet him. He was in a huge hospital. What did he die of? He died at the age of 62 of what? Colon cancer.
There you go. Because one day of the colon not eliminating properly, it backs up into the liver. So what you're saying is all disease is systemic. Genetic, systemic, and it has a toxicity and inflammation component, which a lot of it is in our control. Disease doesn't just happen to us.
See, the most common listing in chronic diseases that I just mentioned are your inflammation, your oxidative process, your telomeres getting shortened, your gut microbes getting imbalanced, and your overstimulation of your sympathetic nervous system. Let me explain a little bit for your listeners. When you have somebody snatching your purse or you're about to hit a bus, your sympathetic nervous system goes on overdrive. Means you're pressing the gas pedal now. So your blood pressure increases, your heart rate increases, your respiratory rate increases, because there's danger. That's great. That is what happens. Once the danger is over, the bus does not hit you, then you put your brake pedal, because now everything comes back to normal, your blood pressure, this, everything else. Now, stress has its advantages. Everybody has been to an examination, giving an exam, and you always have a certain amount of stress. Oh, what is going to be? But once you start writing, in our days, you know, writing, then within 5-10 minutes, your heart and everything becomes normal. That stress is okay, because now you're willing, you're going for a kill, so to speak. So that is okay. But when, what happens? that when this overstimulation of the sympathetic nervous system continues, the chronicity, it continues, it's blood pressure, diabetes, cholesterol, then the cortisone levels come up. And when your cortisone levels come up, what do? You start eating more. Your blood pressure increases. Your sugars go up high. You get obesity. Now you're in a realm which is very difficult to get out. So there, if you are in that situation, please don't just jump to a doctor and say, I want medication. I want sleeping pills. No. First, go in for things like meditation, yoga, sky breathing. And that would get you out of it. If it does not, then go and speak to a doctor. Or I'm not saying, please ask your doctor. This is a disclaimer. But I have found this very important in my case. Another thing is, I had severe diverticulitis. Like you had colon problems, I had. And twice it got perforated. And I write in my book, or I say in my lectures, my surgeon, a good friend of mine, who's standing over me, the second time it got perforated, he says, Akhil, if I don't do operate on you now, you may not survive. But I waited. I took what caused me the diverticulitis, what caused me the inguinal hernia, both sides, what caused me the thrombotic piles, what caused me the regurgitation of acid and all that, what did? No fiber. The American diet has no fiber. An average American eats 18 grams of fiber. Fiber increases your gut bacteria. It does not let you have gallstones. It does so many, brings down your cholesterol. 18 grams. And they said 38 grams. Sorry, you should have at least about 60 to 70 grams of fiber.
Which is very easy to get on a whole food plant-based diet.
Yes.
Because fiber is, I did my master's thesis on the microbiome, and fiber, for our listeners, is your prebiotic. And the information on gut a healthy microbiome is that the prebiotics are more important than the probiotics. And the probiotics have made huge amounts of money. And when a lot of them are tested, they find out they're actually not even active strains. So it's very easy to get our probiotics by being out in nature, really, because we're really breathing our biome. And I do quite a bit of foraging when I'm out in nature. So when the Saskatoons are out, I have a little Saskatoon. I'm getting a little bit of microbiome stuff from there. And to eat a whole food plant-based diet, you don't have to think about fiber. You don't have to think about protein. You don't have to think about nutrients. You eat an organic and as close to the earth diet as you can. And in the whole state, like, have an apple, you know, have a few almonds. And all of it's fiber. And all of it is a prebiotic that will help build your probiotics. And that's where I really want the listeners to focus, as you say, because that heals the gut and it allows it not only feeds the good microbes, but it allows waste to move through the system. And people do not understand how serious it is to even be backed up in our colons for a day. One day of being backed up starts to back up into the liver, creates severe liver toxicity, and then all the other organs, and creates a whole lot of inflammation. But I was listening to a yogi speak yesterday, and he said, if you're feeling unhappy, if you're feeling anxious, if you're feeling, clean your colon, get your colon working better. And I found this out firsthand when I had inflammation with Crohn's and colitis, is that when my gut, I was a runner, I ate pretty good, I ate a lot of fiber, but I had a lot of emotional stress in my life. And that was enough to send me over the edge. So when the colon got inflamed, for the first time in my life, I felt a deep sadness, because the gut and the brain are so integrated and interwoven, right? And that's what you're saying. You're saying those pillars, to really help people understand, is that We need to keep our colon clean. We need to keep our mind clean. We need to keep our heart open. And we need to eat in a way that supports that. Thank you.
You brought me, I'm learning so much from you, and it is so good that you brought this out, you know, because the probiotic, we are talking about pills and in your cereals and in dog's food also and whatnot, children's food. There was a study done by the Weizmann University in Israel. And what they did was they took two groups of people and they gave one group of people the pills, the tablets of probiotics. Now, you remember that the probiotic industry in the world is about $50 billion. Now,
not as much as pharmaceutical, but yeah, it's a pretty big industry.
Pretty big industry, true, but it's a very big industry. And
right.
I'm wondering to myself, because the study did what they found, that it did not propagate the gut at all. So it just came out in the gut and came out without actually doing anything. And, you know, Tammy was wondering, wow, 50 billion worth of poop. That's what it is. That's the amount of poop that this thing is. And to me, the prebiotics, yes, 100, the sauerkraut, your this or your kimchi. You know, kimchi is so famous in the Korea that, like, we say cheese when we get our photographs taken, they say kimchi. It's true. So,
well, we can make our own probiotic vegan cheese, vegan cheese.
Probiotic foods are different. Mm-hmm. I'm all for it. Prebiotic, I'm all for it. But I'm not for things that you get and people are spending like crazy. And they come to me, the patients. And I said, no, if you want to spend money, go and give it to charity. Don't do this. It's not helping you. But change your diet and it'll definitely help you, you know, what it is. When you talked about the bowel movements, I have given a talk on this gut microbiome. I do a series of monthly talks. So this time it'll be the six pillars of lifestyle medicine on the 29th. I'll go deep into sleep, because I always take a topic where I have a problem too sometimes.
Right.
So I do have a problem with sleep. So I've done a lot of work and I will be giving that. But your bowel movements is so important. I used to sit when I was having no fiber. I used to go three times a day. I would sit over there and struggle. Why do you think my diverticula formed? And people turn around and say, diverticula, American doctors, Canadian doctors, Indian doctors will say, diverticula, don't worry about it. It's just a pockets in your colon. Once it gets infected, then worry about it. No. You worry why you are getting diverticuli, because it is an inner lining. And when you stress and when you force yourself, your inner lining becomes weak and forms a diverticuli, a pocket. And therefore, you
a
are...
A pocket of toxins.
Yes, a pocket which is there, which will now form toxins, will now form and form into diverticulitis when you get fever or bleeding or what have you, you know. But my point to people is that I thought this was normal to go three or four times and to strain. But now everything is in the back burner, a diverticulitis. You should be always having a bowel movement within a few minutes. It should be completeness of the bowel movement, and it should be one go. It should not be like, I don't understand why people sit for half an hour in the bathroom to get the bowel movements working. Something wrong, which I know. That is why I told you right in the beginning, I've gone through these things. So I know exactly what has happened, like you, when you had a colon problem. I have a colon problem. We have gone through this and then we are telling people what to do.
Right.
So that makes a bigger impression on people than people who are giving, not that they are bad, they're also doing the right thing like we are doing, but you have to undergo sometimes to understand. You know, the testimonial is a better part than just dishing out advice.
Right. And the colon is quite complex and beautifully, you know, beautifully supplied with nerves, but it's also an epicenter of our emotions. So, you know, for our listeners, sometimes it's not just diet. The more fiber I ate didn't necessarily help my colon. Well, I had to learn to really relax. I had to learn to not stress out. I had to learn other ways, because the colon is a memory bank. And we know now that a lot of what is informed in our brain is informed from our colon. So it's that beautiful vagus nerve that runs back and forth. Before we end, Dr. Keel, thank you so much. I wondered if you would just share with our listeners your pillars of health that you teach on in various ways. And it sounds like now you're teaching a lot on sleep because you're learning more about sleep for yourself. And thank you again for teaching from such an authentic place, and the things that you have come to know, you share with your listeners. And how I reached out to Dr. Akil is my son died of a failing heart. And, you know, they don't know whether it was something genetic or he had a predisposed, but he did suffer with a broken heart syndrome. We do know that a lot of people literally live in this world with very broken hearts. And then if they eat the standard American diet, the sad diet, they get sadder, because the gut gets sadder and the brain gets sadder and the heart needs it all. In fact, there's been a lot of research to show that the heart might be a stronger memory of what goes on in our lives than our brain. So the heart is an incredible organ. So before we hear about the six pillars of health, I would invite everybody to maybe put your hand on your heart and just remember how valuable you are and how valuable your life is and how much you matter. Thank you, Dr. Keel. And can we end with your pillars so that all our listeners can remember that they deserve to be well?
As you can see on the background, it's heart. On my background. And heart is one of the first organs that starts in your body.
Mm-hmm.
It's then that the brain and this and that, when we are talking about the embryo. So heart is immensely, and you can think about one thing, if nothing else, that a heart is the size of a fist. It beats 100,000 times a day, pumping 2,000 gallons of blood in 50,000 miles of your blood vessels. If it is looking after us, we got to look after it. We have to understand to be kind, compassionate. All those things are so important that will make your heart stronger. The six pillars that I talk about is the cornerstone, like I said, was food, a whole food plant-based diet. You have your plate should be, half your plate should be filled with fruits and vegetables. One quarter of your plate should be whole grains, and one quarter of your plate should be plant proteins, like your beans, your lentils, your legumes, and your whole grains should be anything from brown rice to the quinoa to black rice, what have you in your grains. And then your fruits and vegetables. So you have that as a quarter of your this thing. And then your one fourth. So this makes your whole plate. Your American Health Association will tell you to take 30 grams of fat. No. You don't require more than 10 to 11 grams of fat, which you can get it in your natural, because I forgot to mention seeds and nuts are also extremely important. And they give you the oils that are required. You don't need any oil. Like older people, you need your, not your saturated fats, but your omega-3, your flaxseed. You don't need all this trans fats and all. So Food can help you, first of all, to now become more wanting to exercise, your next step. So you go out because you feel good. Because when I did a 100 kilometer bike ride, I came around home and I slept for 5 days. When I did a, because I was on a non-vegetarian diet. When I did my 100-mile bike ride, I was on a plant-based. It was 9.5 hours I finished my 100 miles. I drove 6 hours to my little town in Gadsden. And on the way, my office manager said, "We don't have a doctor coming tomorrow. Would you be able to cover?" I said, "Sure." So you are talking 9.5, 6 hours, and 10 hours next day without batting an eye. This is a powerful message of a whole food plant-based diet. Next is your exercise. Exercise also should be understood. If you're active, that really helps you. No doubt it helps you. But if you're doing it for your cardiac and your respiratory, then try to get at least 70% of your maximum heart rate. That is important. And you don't have to do it all half an hour. You have to do about 150 minutes in a week. But you don't have to do it all at one time. You can do intermittent, 1 minute, 2 minutes, and then move around. And then it should be all your endurance exercises, your muscle strengthening exercises, your balance exercises. All these are in your, so these are your exercises. Number three, sleep. Remember one thing, if you don't get 7 to 9 hours of sleep, you are going to suffer in the long run. And the main thing, two important things from this, I can give you. I'm not going to go elaborate on sleep because I know it is a whole chapter on it. But sleep, remember, do not keep an alarm clock to get up. Keep an alarm clock to sleep. And always remember one important thing. You go to sleep and get up at the same time, even if it is a weekend. Number two, this is what I learned. If you are going, have a hot water shower, but then get into a cool room, even up to 65 degrees Fahrenheit, because that is when you start your sleep, this thing, and it helps you. And other things people know about not having any gadgets or TV in the bedroom, that's different. But sleep is essential. Just recent studies, 10 years back, they said that if you study something, then you need to sleep to retain that in your hypothalamus, in your brain. But now they say that no, you have to first of all sleep and then study, because they did a study on two groups of people, and they found that people who had not slept could not get things in. But people who slept for 8 hours, they got more things. Anyway, this is a big topic, so we'll leave it for some other day. This thing is stress. Like I said, if your chronic stress is going to be there, and as you well pointed out, love, meditation, yoga can help you with this. Finally, abusive substances. It can be even prescription drugs or like pain medications. Your doctor gives you for an ankle sprain, and then you go on back to the doctor and saying, "Oh, I need some more." And then you're hooked. Amphetamines or your fentanyl, whatever, street drugs. These are now alcohol. Alcohol per se does no good health-wise. It was believed it increases the HDL and all that. Absolutely BS. Okay, I'm just using the word BS. It's not true. Now, if somebody is drinking responsibly, I would not stop that person. If they're saying, I would say, don't start in the first place. And they say 1 or 2 drinks for men, and I mean, so 1 or 2 drinks for men and 1 drink for women. What this, my patients would come and tell me, "Oh, that means every day I should have 2 drinks and every day one." No, when you are drinking once in a week or something, that's when you do that, if you are. Otherwise, do not start. It does no good for your health, number one.
It creates leaky gut. As soon as it hits the colon lining, it creates leaky gut. So anything that's going to create intestinal hyperpermeability is not going to be good for us.
Absolutely, absolutely. And finally, your social support system. Even here, just talking to you, I'm getting support. I'm understanding this. We as doctors who come, or people who come 40 years back to this country, we left our families, our support system. Our support system has to be built over here. And support does not always mean taking support. It is giving support. Look at the blue zones. One of the most important thing was that they had a social support system in Okinawa or in California or where have you. So with this, I end and say that keep the six pillars next to you always, and you will not get into a problem. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kill. It's been a pleasure.